Chapter 29. The fate of the Master and Margarita is decided. High above the city, on a stone terrace at the top of one of Moscow's most beautiful buildings, built over a century and a half ago, two were watching the sunset. Azazello and Volant. They were not visible from the street below, shielded from prying eyes by a balustrade with plaster pots and plaster flowers. But from there, they could see almost to the edges of the city. Volant sat on a folding stool, wearing his black soutane. His long, broad rapier was sticking vertically out of a gap between two terraced tiles, making a sundial. Slowly and steadily, the sword's shadow grew longer, creeping towards the black shoes on Satan's feet. Resting his sharp chin on his fist, huddling on the stool with one leg tucked underneath him, Volant had his gaze fixed on the immense collection of palaces, giant buildings, and tiny hovels listed for demolition. Azazello had parted with his modern attire, the jacket, bowler, and patent leather shoes, and was dressed in black, like Volant. He now stood motionlessly, not far from his master, his eyes likewise glued to the city. Volant spoke.
"What an interesting city, is it not?"
Azazello shifted and answered respectfully.
"I prefer Rome, Messiah."
"Yes, it is a matter of taste," Volant replied.
A short while later his voice came again.
"And why is there smoke over there on the boulevard?"
"That's Griboyedov burning,"
Azazello replied.
"I suppose that inseparable couple Korofiov and Behemoth has been there."
"There can be no doubt of it, Messiah."
They fell silent again, both watching as the westward windows on the top floors of the giant buildings lit up with blinding, fragmented sunlight. Volant's eye burned just like one of those windows, even though he was sitting with his back to the sunset. But then something made Volant turn away from the city and direct his attention to a round tower located behind him on the roof. A grim, ragged, black-bearded man, smeared with clay mud, stepped out of the tower wall. He wore a chiton and homemade sandals.
"Ha!" Volant exclaimed, looking at the visitor condescendingly. "You are the last person I would have expected to see here. What is your business, uninvited but foreseen guest?"
"I am here to see you, spirit of evil and master of shadows," said the visitor, glaring unpleasantly at Volant.
"If you are here to see me, why didn't you wish me a good evening, former tax collector?" Volant asked sternly.
"Because I do not wish you anything good," the visitor brazenly replied.
"Then you'll have to reconcile yourself to the fact that I am doing quite well," countered Volant, and a grin twisted his face. "You began spouting nonsense the moment you appeared on this roof, and let me tell you what it is, your tone. You spoke as though you did not recognize shadows or evil. Kindly think on this. Where would all your good be if evil did not exist? What would the earth look like without shadows? Objects cast shadows, and people too. Here is the shadow from my sword, but there are also shadows from trees and living creatures. Or would you strip the entire globe of trees and living things to fulfill your fantasy of basking in barren light? You are a fool."
"I will not argue with you, old sophist," Matthew Levi replied.
"You cannot argue with me, for the reason I have already mentioned. You are a fool," Volant said, and asked, "Speak quickly before you tire me. Why are you here?"
"He sent me."
"And what would he have you tell me, slave?"
"I'm not a slave," Matthew Levi said, growing increasingly angry. "I am his disciple."
You and I speak different languages, as always, Voland rejoined. But that does not change the things we speak of. So, then.
He has read the Master's work, Matthew Levi said, and asks you to take the Master with you and reward him with peace. Or is that too hard for you to do, Spirit of Evil?
Nothing is too hard for me, Voland replied, as you well know.
He was silent for a moment and then added,
But why don't you take him with you into the light?
He has not earned the light. He has earned peace, Levi spoke in a sad voice.
Tell him it will be done, Voland replied.
His eye flashed and he added,
And leave here at once.
He also asks that you take the one who loved him and suffered for him, Levi said to Voland, pleading for the first time.
We would never have figured that out without you. Go.
Matthew Levi disappeared. Voland summoned Azazello and commanded,
Fly over there and arrange everything.
Azazello left the terrace, and Voland remained alone. His solitude was short-lived, however. The sound of footsteps on terrace tiles came from nearby, along with two animated voices. And Korovyov and Behemoth appeared before Voland. The fat man no longer had his primus, but was loaded with other items. A small landscape in a golden frame was tucked under his arm, and a half-burned chef's coat was draped over one hand. His other hand held a whole salmon with skin and tail still attached. Korofioff and Behemoth reeked of burning. Behemoth's nose was covered in soot, and his cap was half incinerated.
Salut, Messiah!
Cried the restless couple, and Behemoth waved his salmon.
Real nice, said Voland.
Imagine, Messiah,
Behemoth shouted with cheerful excitement.
They took me for a looter.
Judging by the items you are carrying, Voland replied, glancing at the landscape, that's exactly what you are.
Believe me, Messiah,
Behemoth began intimately.
No, I don't, Voland curtly replied.
Messiah, I swear that I made heroic attempts to save everything that could possibly be saved, and this is all of it.
Why don't you tell me how Griboyedov caught on fire?
Voland asked. Both Korofioff and Behemoth spread their hands and raised their eyes to the sky, and then Behemoth cried,
I can't fathom it myself. We were sitting there quietly, peacefully, having a bite to eat. And suddenly, bang, bang,
Korofioff picked up.
Gunfire! Mad with fear, Behemoth and I ran to the boulevard, our pursuers hot on our heels. We made a dash for Timir Yazev. But our sense of duty,
Behemoth interjected,
overcame our shameful cowardice, and we returned.
Ah, so you returned, said Voland. Well, then I'm sure the building burned to a crisp.
To a crisp, Korofiev confirmed sadly. Literally to a crisp, Messiah, as you have so accurately put it. Nothing but ashes. I headed to the meeting room. That's the one with the columns, Messiah,
Behemoth narrated,
hoping to save something valuable. Oh, Messiah, my wife, had I only been married, risked becoming a widow at least 20 times. But fortunately, I am not married, Messiah. And let me be frank, I'm glad I'm not. Oh, Messiah, who would trade a bachelor's freedom for a burdensome yoke?
Again with the nonsense, Voland noted.
I understand and continue,
replied the cat.
So then, the landscape, nothing else could be removed from the room. The flames rushed in my face. I ran to the storeroom and rescued the salmon. I ran to the kitchen and rescued the coat. I believe I did all I could, Messiah, and failed to see the reason for the sceptical look on your face.
And what was Korovioff doing while you were looting? Asked Voland.
I was helping the firemen, Messiah,
Korovioff responded, pointing to his torn trousers.
Ah, in that case, I'm sure they'll have to build a completely new building.
It will be built, Messiah, Korofioff replied. Permit me to assure you of it.
Well, then, let us hope it is even better than the old,
said Ferland.
It will be, Messiah,
said Korofioff.
It certainly will, added the cat. Trust me, I'm a regular prophet. In any case, we are here, Messiah,
Korofioff reported,
and await your instructions.
Volant rose from his chair and approached the balustrade. For a long time, he gazed silently into the distance, his back to his entourage. Finally, he stepped away from the edge, resumed his seat, and said,
There will be no instructions. You have done all that you could, and I no longer require your services for the time being. You may rest. A storm is coming. The final storm. It will finish all that's been left unfinished, and we will set out.
Very well, Messiah, the two buffoons said, and disappeared somewhere behind the round tower in the centre of the terrace.
The storm that Volant spoke of was already gathering on the horizon. A black cloud rose from the west and cut off half the sun. Then it covered all of it. The air on the terrace became cool. Soon afterwards, it became completely dark. Darkness, descending from the west, obscured the giant city. Gone were the bridges, the palaces, all of it gone, as though it had never existed. A fiery thread ran across the sky. A thunderclap shook the city. Another one came, and the storm began. Volant disappeared in the gloom.